Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are in the most efficient way to get the show. You are in the iTunes search engine. Enter the name Warman Kickfighting Show or enter Lord Gaul, and my podcast pops right up. Lord Gaul was the username I used back when I fell in love with kickboxing, Muay Thai, back when I was on Kakutugi, K1 USA, K1 fans, etc., etc. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into some kickboxing. First of all, I want to apologize. Been gone for a couple weeks. I've just been crazy busy. You know, before I talked to you guys, or when I talked to you last, it was before the Glory event, and I was there at the Glory event in Virginia. I was cornering Myron Dennis. We came up short that night. It was a crazy day. Myron actually, he watched his child be born earlier in the day on, you know, Facebook. It's crazy how what technology does nowadays. But he thought that that small gap that he'd be away wouldn't, you know, they thought they were going to have the child possibly when he got back or right before he left. But just the way it works, God said it was that Friday afternoon, so that's when the baby came. So he watched his baby get born, and then he went to the venue to fight. So crazy day for him. So super proud of him for, you know, going out there, putting in a good effort. Shout out to the opponent that won. So I'll go ahead and get into the card completely. And thank you guys again for your patience, and I apologize for the big gap. I will return later this week to give you guys the summer series. I'd gotten away from the summer series. This is my promise to you. The next 4 weeks, I'm going to be going through the summer series that I promised that I was going to be doing. So later this week, expect to get an episode about the best upsets in kickboxing, in particular the last 20 years. I'll probably go back maybe a little bit before that, but I'll definitely the last 15 years. The reason why I'm choosing the last about 15, 20 years, the reason why I'm kind of staying in that gap is because I want to pick a fight that you guys can go sit down and watch. You can see the upset and understand the magnitudes of it and so on. So we're going to do upset. We're going to do controversies. We're going to, you know, really hit on some of the, even I'll even do one that's the best events, you know. But the next few weeks, expect to get a lot of kickboxing from me, a lot of history. It really should be a fun time, and I'm excited about talking kickboxing again. But again, I apologize. I'm opening up a new gym, working with fighters. I've been on a plane like every, you know, week, you know, for like the last, you know, month. So forgive me, and I will get right to it. So we break down this event in Virginia. First things first, one thing I would consider is the timing of doing Virginia. The venue that we used was the same venue that they used before when they came to Virginia. It's right on the Old Dominion campus. Old Dominion, for the international fans, it's a college here in the United States. It's a college in Virginia, in Norfolk, Virginia. And it is, they did the first show during the college year, so college students went. So they had a pretty good crowd. You know, Myron was there. Myron actually fought Brian Collette on this card because Brian Collette lives just, you know, down the street from the venue. And he said that for that event, they had a pretty good card. This event that took place in the middle of the summer did not have the best of card. And what you didn't see, the best of, the card's one thing, but didn't have the best of crowd. The crowd was probably at its peak during the amateurs, because before the fight started, there was like, I don't know, eight, nine fights for the amateurs. And they had a pretty good crowd noise, pretty good support for some of them. Not huge, just solid. But I was hoping that with that crowd and the crowd that's coming for the, you know, the pro, we should have a pretty solid event. And it wasn't the case at all. A lot of them left after the amateur portion of the card. So maybe moving forward, Glory should consider the Bellator model of doing some of those amateur fights before the event and then some of those amateur fights as the walkout. That way you keep the crowd around to see your whole product. And then afterwards, maybe their takeaway is, hey, I like watching this as a whole. I like watching this fight as a whole. Like this event as a whole, rather than the individual I came to watch. So maybe that's something they consider down the road. But as they're trying to grow the brand of kickboxing, the getting eyes is a big part of it. And excuse me, this one was on TV by an hour delay. I believe it was broadcasted at 11 o'clock local. What was it, 10 o'clock local? I can't remember. So the event took place at like 10 o'clock local, but it was on TV an hour later, you know, as far as how they are broadcasting it. So it was just wasn't a huge delay, but I would think that they'd got to get a little bit closer to making that live. If you're going to be that close, if you're going to be just a couple hours or an hour later, you might as well just be live. But that's what they are trying to accomplish. So, but we're getting closer. I can't get mad at them. They are moving in the right direction. They were doing it a couple days after in the past. So I'm hoping for, you know, good numbers as they continue to play with this format. They're going to be in America again in New Jersey for Gloria 33. So time will tell how this all shakes out. Let's go ahead and go down the list of the fights. First of all, we have a new featherweight championship, or say, I should say two-time. Gabriel Varga wins the title back from Zahir Adamczyk. It's majority decision. It was the difference in the fight, of course, comes down to the down scored in the second round. In exchange, Varga was able to catch Adamczyk, and Adamczyk went down, hurt a little bit, not crazy hurt. And you can tell I was right behind the corner for Varga, and they were just saying simple things like whenever they got in the clinch, they kept telling Varga, keep working, keep punching, let the ref be the one to break you up, you know, stay behind your jab, look to win those exchanges, and look to have volume. See, here Adamczyk is his usual self. He's super slick. He'll, you know, he, you know, does like fake knees that lead to punches, fake kicks that lead to punches, weird angles. He explodes into offense at odd angles. Varga was just more consistent, looking for shots here and there, winning in space. I always thought that it was close, but I thought that you can make an argument for Varga really edging out some of the rounds. The round with the down, of course, is the biggest because that almost means that I gave Varga round one and then he gets scored the down in the second. So I was like, Adamczyk's going to win the last three to, you know, even get this thing to be a draw. So some people had him winning down the stretch the last three. I thought they were competitive. I did like his work better down the stretch. But in the end, when they said decision, I was fine with it. It was a little bit too ho-hum. They don't have... If there's one division that needs great work, it's the featherweight division. Because right now, K1's featherweight division is bumping. You know what I'm saying? It's got Ilias Blade, Masaru Glunder, Masaki Nori, Ku Fairtex, best in the world. It's vibrant. It's got fights and fighters that you want to see on a regular basis. The best in the world. And Glory, they're a little slow to the trigger on getting Blade, and he's gone. And the division has some decent athletes out there, some decent fighters out there. They do have Mustafa Mirani, and that's very important because he is a very good fighter. But it can't just be a three-man round robin of Vargas, Adamczyk, and Mustafa Mirani. They got to add someone else to the mix. Now's the time to go after Liam Harrison again. He'd be a great pick. Got to go after that type of guy. What's going on? Oh, Kevin Ross's courses with Bellator Kickboxing. But they've got to try to make these moves happen. They got to try to make this division better. Congratulations to Gabriel Varga, who he first got my attention when he fought for K1 in that small event that it took place in Vegas, in Los Angeles. It was supposed to be a big event, but it ended up just being a... had some solid fights on it. They had some good local ones, but Varga really stood out in that one. And since then, I've been paying attention to him, and he just hadn't had the consistent opportunities. Well, this is a good one for him, so hopefully he can move forward. Yuta Kubo's still out there. K1 hasn't been using Yuta Kubo as much recently, so that's a person for them to consider going after again. But they got to add depth to that because featherweight is the division that they have the least amount of people. Mentioned before, I'll go ahead and throw our fight out of the way. Brian Collette, Myron Dennis, you know, I can't talk about too much just because you want to, you know, do honor to the other person. And not, I know that I can't do it from a unbiased situation because I was in the corner. I will say this. Brian Collette has got all the tools as far as physical attributes go. He could be one of the best fighters in the world. Now, again, he's a little chinny as far as some of those losses that you look before in the past, like his loss to Jacoby and his loss that he had in the Legacy Kickboxing Tournament. But as far as fast twitch muscles and as far as being able to throw fast hands, sneaky head kick, low kicks, Brian Collette's very, very talented. Like he's talented and he's got natural physical gifts. But he's going to need his kickboxing acumen to hold up when he goes against some of the better guys and then have the defense to protect that chin. But other than that, he's got all the tools. Myron Dennis, Came up short, as I said before. Weird day with him having to shout early in the day. When it came down to executing effective offense, we had good moments and spots, but Brian Collette was better over 9 minutes. Plain and simple. So hopefully they use Myron again against a different opponent, because he's only fought Brian Collette both of his times fighting in Glory. Hopefully he gets an opportunity to go against someone like a Murad Buzidi. And that's kind of what both of them are thinking. Brian Collette and Dennis, they want to go against international guys. Nobody wants to get here and fight another American. But I understand why they would do it for Glory TV, because it means that you're going to get a winner from America. And you can't have a full card of foreigners in the U.S. You got to have it mixed up. So good job for both guys, and good luck moving forward. The light heavyweight tournament had its surprises. I will be the first one to say I would need to see it again. But Ariel Machado and Pavel Zverev, there was definitely controversy in the back. A lot of people did not feel Machado won the fight. I was fine with it on that view, but I didn't have full consistent watching the fight because I was there, so I didn't get that full of it. I thought Zverev did some good things. I thought he hurt him to the body, which hurt what Machado carried with him into the last fight, which we'll talk about later. But Machado is a good win for him. Good for him to move forward, and we're developing names right now. The light heavyweight division is doing what we are not seeing from the featherweight division. It's developing some names that we haven't heard of before. So fast forward to the next fight. Zinedine Hamer Lane gets a brutal KO over Warren Thompson. He catches him with a right hand while Thompson was kicking. Thompson just does this slow motion head dive type like KO, like the way he fell down. It was scary stuff. It was good that he was okay afterwards. But Lane, that was an awesome, awesome shot. Zinedine then goes on to stop Machado to the body because he was carrying the wounds from the Pavel Zverev fight. We were in the back with Machado. We were in the back with Lane. They were both in our corner. And then so when both of them won, it's kickboxing, so we're used to being in the same room as the other guy. It happens from venue to venue because sometimes they just have the space that they have. But shout out to him. It was a great, great offensive strike. Body tipped over. It was on the one KO with Thompson. Machado went down from the body shot. There's no better way to burst on the scene than to stop guys. So good job by Zinedine Hamer Lane. Hopefully we get more from down the road. Aaron Machado didn't do a bad service to himself, and Pavel Zverev is a guy to watch moving forward for sure. Despite this setback, maybe he can go against, well, I won't say Warren Thompson. Maybe he can go against Brian Collette. That'd be a good fight to put together, you know. But let that light heavyweight division develop into something else. So good stuff by Zinedine taking that tournament. We move on to the Super Fight Series, which finished with Chael Lewis Perry going against Maurice Greene. I talked to Maurice Greene before the fight. And Maurice Greene, he trains in St. Cloud, Minnesota, so he's kind of away from everything. He said that before the fight, he had no pad holding and he had no sparring partners. He said all he could do was go to the gym, get some heavy bag work in, and every once in a while someone would get him some instruction, and then he would, get his work in as far as running and so on, whatever. Whereas Chael Lewis Perry, he has been, training with AKA, so he's been around a bunch of MMA guys, but he's been learning, and he's been in there with guys who are trying to kill him. He's getting good fight day sparring to prepare himself. So on paper, I knew this was a tough one. Maurice Greene was tough, and he's trying to do his thing. But again, Chael Lewis Perry, he can crack. He can crack. That guy can punch pretty good for a tall guy. He was scoring good. Now, what I mean by punch pretty good for a tall guy, when I see those wiry arms, sometimes I think it has to connect a certain way with the wiry arms. But sometimes, like a Badahari, doesn't matter how it comes, they throw with enough violence, it can hurt people. And Chael Lewis Perry, he has that. He really can shock some people. Well, perfect example, Sammy Seltz, to me, doesn't necessarily have KO power, but he can KO you, he can land the right kind of strike at the right kind of at the right time. But does every shot he throw absolutely make it seem like a guy's gonna die, at any moment? He's not that kind of fighter. He's capable of scoring those kind of KOs. Chael Lewis Perry, he's got some pretty good pop behind it. I'm not saying he's smart content or anything. I'm just saying that with that length, he's able to turn punches over. He's a good enough athlete and a strong enough guy to get people hurt. So good stuff for him moving forward, and he just needs fights and development. He is 2-1 in Glory, or he is 3-1 in Glory, and he's going to have to get more opportunities if he's going to be in the main heavyweight, talk down the road, because we're talking Rico Verhoeven's category. And right now, the guy that I'm seeing, unless he catches him with something, he's going to have trouble with Anderson Broderick Silva. He's going to have trouble with Ismael Lant. He's going to have to figure out some consistent kickboxing, because you can't KO everybody. But he's doing a good job of KOing the ones that he can. Speaking of Anderson Broderick Silva, he gets a KO over Gordon Haupt. It was interesting because I was in the back with Gordon's people. We were all kind of, we were sharing the same corner. And he did a good job of, like in his preparation, you know, he was kind of mentally preparing. He came out and he let his hands go and he caught Anderson with a couple things. But Anderson, the savvy veteran, stayed smooth. Once the shot landed to the body the first time, I was like, Gordon's in trouble. And then he just poured it on and he was able to get Hop out of there with another shot down the road. I believe it was a body kick. I can't remember exactly. But he was just too much. Anderson Broderick Silva, the better fighter, gets out of there, I think injury-free for the most part. He's going to be fighting for the title. Anderson Broderick Silva is the guy who has, to the best of my knowledge, I don't think anyone has fought for the Glory brand more than Anderson Broderick Silva, because he's fought on all over the European cards and the USA cards, which is rare. Usually it's one or the other. He's had his losses, four-man tournament. He gets stopped by Gita. You know, he lost to Remy Bonjasky, then he beat Remy Bonjasky later. Some people felt like he lost that fight. But I just keep looking back and I keep thinking, man, this guy has been competing all the time for the Glory brand. So it's kind of like a, in the way that Michael Bisping got a title shot earlier this year. It's like you're giving it to a guy who's been working for you for a really long time. Anderson's got the skill set to pull off the upset. I don't see it happening, but I'm glad that he gets the opportunity, and I'm glad that he got this stoppage win. He's good people. Next, we have a women's fight. Funda Alkiyaz gets a victory over Vanessa de Huele. Vanessa just couldn't do any. To me, she never got a consistent offense going ever. And then also, she walks up with her gloves. I've seen this done before. As opposed to putting her hands up, she kind of puts her gloves up to like her chin line and walks forward. And what she didn't realize is she's not protecting anything. So Alkiyaz is, Alkiyaz was just picking her off. Single shots, double, you know, one twos. Anything she wanted to do was landing. The fight flow never picked up. It never turned into clean kickboxing. It was not one of the better representations of the skill that you see at the top of the women's division, even though Funda was doing a good job of scoring. And Duale, I've seen her look better before. I just thought that this wasn't a good fight, but you know, between the two of them, the chemistry didn't work out here between their skill sets. But man, it just kind of shows. This is pretty much Tiffany Von Seuss Turner to lose. That's what it looks like so far. Isis Verbeek might be able to give her some resistance. And then we'll see what happens with Zola Frosto. But wow, as I look at it, I just go, I just don't see it. I don't see how this tournament is going to, you know, further the career of the winner other than putting the belt on them. It's just they needed more development. It's just not happening the way that I thought that it would. But we'll see. This is just their first tournament run. Maybe next year's got more, you know, talented women in it. So we'll see. Next fight on the card, Francis Ambang gets a decision over Michael Stevens. This one was weird to me. And maybe you guys can explain it if you heard it on TV better. But I'm watching this fight. Francis Ambang comes out, better kickboxer, wins round one. Michael Stevens has a little bit more success in round two. Francis Ambang, more pop. When Francis threw, they were big shots. He landed all what I call the sexy shots. And he takes round two. They go into round three. Ambang is tired. Stevens is all over him. He's scoring consistently. Not like killing him, but just kind of keeping in his face, pressuring, scoring offense, nothing big, pressuring, scoring offense or whatever. And then from fatigue or something, we get a down call from Big John. And so I'm like, okay, cool. Michael Stevens, he just forced an extra round, and he's got all the energy. So this is going his way. Somehow, when they go to the scorecards, and I'm certain that I saw what I saw. I'm certain that I saw Big John doing a count on Ambang and had Ambang in the corner and counting. He stopped the count. I don't even think he got to eight. It sounded like he stopped the count at like six or seven. And then he started the fight on, and then they go to the card. So I'm like, easy call, 28-28. Then they say 29-28, not for Ambang, not taking into account the down scored by Stevens, or that they was rewarded to Stevens. So in my mind, I'm like, did they decide that it wasn't a real down? And if so, who is a judge to decide that that's how it is? If a ref calls it a down, it's a down, and that's how you have to do it accordingly. You don't get to say whether or not you feel it was actual down on the scorecard. You've got to go off of what happened. And if it is a, you know, 10-8 when a down occurs, then it's got to be a tie. They should have been a draw, and it should have been an extra round. But I guess somebody would have to explain it to me. Maybe I'll go revisit the fight to see if it was explained online. But when I was there, I kept asking what happened. So I asked. Stevens was in the back with us. So, I mean, the four rooms, the big, it's a big section. It's like five areas for fighters and their coaches. And then he was over. And then after the fight was over, I just, you know, said, hey, you know, you did really good in the third round. And I was like, what happened with the down? And he said they called it a down. But when I went to the back, or when we were sitting there, we didn't hear it on the scorecard. So as far as they're concerned, they didn't quite know what had happened. So if there was a change, if something did happen with the scorecards, or if it wasn't actually a down, they were not let in on it. But everybody could see clear as day that there was a count for Ambang. Now, I'm just going off what my eyes saw, but for all I know, is old school, the count that they used to do for groin shots and at Showtime back in the day. One of the dumbest things ever in kickboxing history. The 10 count they had for groin shots. Stupid. Stupid. Glad it's gone forever. But anyways, back to the subject at hand. Ambang wins. Came out. You know, he still got that great story. He brought all his kids over and that kind of stuff, whatever. So I'm happy for him there. But, man, I thought that they were a draw according to the rules. Giga Chikadze gets a body kick stoppage of Chris Masseri in the first round with a liver kick. This was clear from the beginning that Giga was better. Chris Masseri is a guy who's coming off being stopped by the body to Ilias Belaid. He just fought in the K1 tournament, and he came over here, gets this opportunity to fight with Glory, and he gets stopped. Giga is a talented guy. He is probably another name to consider for fighting for the title in the featherweight division because they need names, so Giga wouldn't be a bad idea. Chris Masseri, it's not that he doesn't have kickboxing skill. He shows some good moments, but his body's definitely going to have to get stronger. So hopefully Chris Masseri gets better, and Giga Chikadze, he will be a guy who you want to watch for time to come. I remember him. He fought at a bigger weight, fought at 55 when I first saw him, or 70 kg, so 154. Fought in at Showtime back in the day. I'm happy that he's finding consistent work. And, you know, it's a tough gig, you know, being in that division. They don't have as many names to compete and move yourselves forward against, but there are athletes out there to sign, so they should go sign them. Last one I'll say real quick, Cedric Smith beats Roger Corbin, you know, and it was an armed forces bout, so I'm just going shout out to him, the military and so on. Definitely want to make sure they get their due. So, next thing I'm going to talk about, I'm going to hit up the Kunlun scene. Kunlun's having a big year, and for me, I felt like the star of the, you know, of the day for me yesterday was Artur Kashenko. And the reason why I say that is Artur Kashenko has got one of the most interesting stories. Like, just you can't put, I won't say pump, you know, put sense to it, but you can't underestimate what he's accomplished outside of his K1 run. He really has got some great wins. Jotzen Kleifertex, you know, Alex Pereira now, just Jonathan Alvera, he stopped him. He was a Glory guy. He's just doing the best he can to fight and make money as a prize fighter. And he's just growing. And even as he got bigger, he used to keep starving himself down. And then people were starting to take advantage of his body when he was known as the Body Ripper when he first burst on the scene. But now he's settling into the fact that he's a bigger dude. And he's letting himself get bigger and he's getting strong. And he's still having a lot of offensive success with a lot of these tough guys. So shout out to him. Basically, fight was good. Good moments for both guys. I thought that, you know, Kashenko had a bit of a lead in it. And then all of a sudden, Kashenko lands a big shot over the top. He gets the guy hurt. The ref strangely came in. I don't know what he saw or why he came in to stop it. But the ref strangely came in to break up the action. Once it restarted, Kashik goes back on the haunt. He landed a shot over the top. Didn't look like it landed all that good, but you could see that Alex Pereira was still out of it a little bit. They did an 8 count. After the 8 count, Kashik came back with the hands work, and the ref stopped it on the feet. And afterwards, you could see how woozy Alex was. Big time win. Just a big time win. I mean, he's such a talented dude, and he's just one of the great characters in kickboxing. Been around for a long time, had a lot of wins. I've had a lot of success. I want to see more of this dude. I always want to see more of him. He's just, he's a talent. So I was pretty happy when, you know, the results came out and he was the winner and a lot of people were waiting on that fight. He's a talented dude. You always want to see more of him. So shout out to, you know, Artur Kashenko. I guess the thing that's next, and one person pointed it out, they said that he did a picture or took a pose or something with Nicky Holtzgen. Now, I did not see that. I'll be the first one to say it. I didn't see it. So I can't, you know, attest to it actually happening or not happening. I will say this. Kashenko's already got a win over Nicky Holtzgen. I would love to see them do it again. Now, most people feel that Nicky Holtzgen would win that. But I want to see it. I want to see it. I want to see if Kashenko, who is one of the best fighters in the world, who was robbed of a K-1 World Grand Prix in a lot of people's eyes, I want to see if he could turn around and be the best on another weight class. Because if he could do that, if he could beat Nicky Holtzgen, he truly is something special. And I don't know. As I try to figure out this kickboxing thing, it's we're in a weird spot because you just don't know what, without us having a it's K1 or it's whatever, without the clarity of it being one thing, one fight sport, you just never know. You know, you never know who's what and who's moving forward and when fights are going to happen and how cards are going to come together and so on. But I will say this, it's been super clear that Artur Kashenko is one of the best fighters on the planet. And this win over Alex Pereira is a reflection of that. And it's also a reflection of, if you don't make your money in Glory or K1, Kunlun is doing enough great stuff for you to have opportunities there. So definitely, you know, this fight's online, so go find it, go check it out and so on. But you guys really, really should take note of what Artur Kashenko is doing right now. Another fight I want to mention from that same card, the Bukau, you know, killer, Kayal Dzhenaev, he got stopped by Superbon Bunchamek, and Superbon, of course, longtime veteran, Bunchamek, I like it's cool that he's associated with Bukau's gym, but like, Kayal was considered the guy, you know what I'm saying, for that win, but there were holes in his game even in that win. It was the elbow and the cut that made it so significant. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Time will tell. But I'm glad that Superbon got that victory in a card that I really didn't know that much about outside of those main two. The next Kunlun card is going to be awesome. But, man, this one really did have, you know, the kind of fight and the kind of results that, you know, people want to know what happens to the guy who beat Bukau, Kayal. They want to know, how is Artur Kashenko, you know, beating elite guys without being on an elite promotion? Kunlun's given them financial opportunities to have success. So, good stuff there. Any other ones I want to mention from that? I guess I can mention that. What is it? Vasil Kalasa, who's now based in Hong Kong. He's been there for a while. He gets a victory over Norla Mulali. I just want to go ahead and pop that one on there. I'm just trying to name a couple. See, Mazzaro Klunder, I believe, won, if I'm remembering correctly. So I'm just kind of going down some of the fights. None that I want to go too crazy about, but those are the main ones that I wanted to bring up. So definitely go out there, and you can literally catch a lot of these fights. They're posted. Kunlun, to their credit, they not only post when they've got events, they post results, they post YouTube videos of things, they post when their stream's available. They want you to see their kickboxing brand. So do your best to go and check them out. There was an event, a W5 event. I believe it's called Legends. Let me go find my notes in that. W5 Legends in Prague on October 8th was announced. It is an awesome card. Thomas Rahn versus Andre Stoica. I haven't even heard any of the other names. Already worth it. Thomas Rahn still putting in work later in his life. He's been a kickboxing mainstay for a while. Had some good wins, had some losses. He's probably most known for being the win that put Daniel Guida on the scene. Daniel Guida had already had success before, but when he was on at Showtime, they kind of had a low kick, you know, back and forth that at the highest of levels. And then Guida ended up winning that in the second round. He won that low kick battle. But Ron's always been known as a tough guy who's got a good offensive game. He just doesn't have KO pop, and that's why he'll always struggle. And that's why he never got to the top, even though he kind of made a name for himself. Andre Stoica can KO some guys. Known for fighting about 2-9, but Ron can make that too. That should be a really solid fight. We got Jan Sukup against Freddie Camayo. Again, good fight for both guys, older in their careers. Loba Suda versus Zivit Porterak. Again, Porterak older in his career. Quality names. I would say the most entertaining fight from a who's the best in the world standpoint would be the 75kg world title fight between Johan Kangulo and Cosmo Alexander. Even though Cosmo's older, that fight's going to be awesome. Just, it's good stuff. I'm glad they put that one together. So I'm pretty pumped. It's just, kickboxing still doing good things, you know, despite the fact that we don't have the platform that we had before. Go ahead and wrap this up, or these, you know, results up. Didn't want to have a super long show today because, like I said, I'm coming back later in the week. When I come back later in the week, I'm going to have, I'm going to have those breakdowns for you guys of, you know, the summer series that I mentioned as far as moments to remember in kickboxing history. And we're going to do upsets later in this week. So I'm not going to go too big in today's episode. Just a little one to make sure you guys know I'm still alive and I still love kickboxing and I'm still going to post stuff. I just ran into a little bit of a wall, so I wasn't able to get stuff out as much as possible. But I want to go ahead and talk about Kunlun again. Kunlun is probably one of the most important things to the kickboxing world right now. But let me go ahead and mention to you guys some of the names they got going on for Kunlun 44, just to give you an idea of what they're putting together out there. We got Anatoly Moiseev versus Muhammad Jiraiya. I'm crying on the inside with joy when I saw that. That is just, I can't fathom that kind of matchup coming together in that way. That is a huge matchup with you know, prospect and pound-for-pound, stakes. It's just absolutely wonderful. Christopher Mena and Cedric Manhoff. Christopher Mena, of course, is Jiraiya. He's got a background in the infusion kickboxing. Jabir Askarov versus Khalid El-Haj. With the age of both of them, that's a great fight. Mustafa Haida against Claudio Bedoy. Then we got Vyacil Kolasa again. He's fighting again. I'm looking at this card and I'm looking at what they're doing out there. Kunlun does a great job of putting it together. It's just a good combination of elite international competition, Chinese upstarts who have been getting their opportunities, and they've been getting victories here and there. It really, really is a lot of fun seeing what's happening in the kickboxing world right now, despite the fact that we don't have the clarity that some people would want. I'm going to keep, you know, pumping this kickboxing and letting you guys know just how big and just how important it is, and just what good things are happening in the kickboxing game right now. So thank you all very much for following the podcast. I will be back, I think, maybe Thursday, and that's Wednesday or Thursday, and that's what I'll have my next episode, just to get you guys into that summer series. So be ready. If you want, go ahead and send me some messages on Twitter of some of your favorite upsets and so on. But I think you're going to like my list. I've got some criteria for it, but we're really going to go into the background of these fights, what makes them great upsets, more so than A was, you know, favored to beat B. I'll go a lot deeper than that. So thanks, everybody. God bless you guys. Have a good one. Peace.